Battle-Born Injury Lawyers presents The Big Five at Four. Number five.
All right, let's do it. Time is short, 57 minutes until we hand it off to the NBA Finals in game number three. Tip at six, pregame at five. Warriors at home for the first time, laying 4.5 against the Raptors. We have a couple of, am I wrong to laugh at this? Or is it wrong to laugh at this? But you were just laughing about something horrible before we went to break, so I don't even know if we can top it.
Yeah, my grandfather recently dying? Yeah, that's what I was.
Yes, you are. Yeah. And he just doubles down on it, Chrissy. What's wrong with him?
I'm not laughing.
It's not funny. He said he laughed to hide the pain.
Is that what he does?
It's okay. Like, I think it's an everybody.
It's an uncomfortable situation.
Moment.
You have to laugh. What else can you do?
Yeah. Grandpa Hill.
Is it wrong to laugh at something that happens in a wheelchair basketball game? I hope not.
I don't think so. I mean, I think, I actually think a lot of people were laughing at this clip, but I actually thought it was more impressive than anything else.
It's hard to describe the clip, but try.
So it's a guy,
looks like a fast break situation. You got a couple of chairs going at each other. One defender, someone's charging down the floor.
Yeah, as you said, a wheelchair basketball game. Somebody has a fast break down the left side of the court. There's somebody chasing him right down the middle. And so just before it's about time to shoot the layup, the guy who's coming down the middle defensively goes to try to block what would be a layup from the guy shooting. The guy who's going to shoot comes to a dead stop, stops the wheelchair, and spins around, causing the defender to just go flying by and his chair to tumble over several times.
You're a big guy. Could you ever do a real effective spin move in the open court? Because I don't believe you could.
Oh, yeah,
for sure. Stop.
For sure.
You can do one on the block. You're not doing one on the move.
Oh, spin dribble? All day. All day.
This guy's better than you. Just saying.
He's very good.
He's better than me.
Oh, he's incredible. I couldn't do it in a wheelchair. That's a given.
I wasn't saying in a wheelchair.
That's for sure.
It is ridiculous.
I think it's more impressive as a wheelchair player to do it than somebody running.
1,000%.
Yeah.
The guy tumbling is just hilarious. I mean, I feel bad for him because he just got crushed, but man, he got destroyed by the spin. How do we know about wheelchair basketball? Did you actually get in the wheelchair out at Nellis?
Yeah.
Holy crap. We got invited out there by our buddy Cameron Dadgar about 5 years ago, and we were just trying to move around a little bit and just get off shots.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Very difficult.
Because without the drive of your lower half, like to learn how to shoot just with your upper body is ridiculous. And then the power that you have to have and the stamina.
Yeah.
Doing the wheels.
Yeah.
God, my boobs are shaking.
It's like Drake and Degrassi.
Good reference.
That was his character.
Jimmy.
Yeah.
Drake, it's over my head every time. What's
Drake's
going on here?
And Degrassi was in a wheelchair.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Like when he sprung on the scene before he was, you know, this rapper, he played basketball.
In a wheelchair.
On Degrassi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So I know a lot of people, this clip was really circulating yesterday. I know you saw it, and there was a lot of people saying the same thing. Like, is it wrong to laugh at this, at the guy, you know, getting so juked out of his chair?
No. This is fun. This is fun. Where are we going?
Well, I mean, immediately the first thing I did when I saw this clip is...
Don't go to the rule book for wheelchair basketball, please.
I Googled basic rules of the game for wheelchair basketball. I still have the tab called up on my computer right now. So I thought right away, you know what? It might be a travel.
It might be a travel.
It looked like it. Now,
wheelchair on wheelchair, a brilliant spin, another guy goes flying, and you want to call traveling.
Well, I wanted to look it up.
How can it be traveling? You're in a wheelchair. You're rolling all over the place.
You're not. You have to dribble.
That's a good point. You do have to dribble.
And he did dribble. So he did the spin and then dribble. I thought maybe that would be illegal on some level. However, there is no double dribble rule in wheelchair basketball. The only rule in terms of dribbling and movement is you can dribble, but you can only take two pushes before you dribble again, or shoot, or do something else. You can't do more than two pushes of the chair before dribbling again, or making a decision on shooting or passing. So, in this case, I will say, watching it, I think he only pushed once to spin. I believe it was one push of the wheel to get himself power to spin around. So I think it was a perfectly legal move. It was totally acceptable under the rules of wheelchair basketball.
Well, the entire world is glad that you looked it up.
I'm sure they are.
To make sure someone wasn't getting away with something.
You're telling me you didn't think at all what the rule was?
I didn't at all, no. No, I just thought it was a really cool move. And, man, the guy is in a wheelchair. This is unbelievable. Not, hey, he's cheating.
I didn't know if he was. I wanted to find out. I wanted to know if it was legal or not. And is this something that happens often? I couldn't find many other cases of it in the game. I'm sure other people will be working on it.
First whistleblower?
No, I mean, do other people
literally the whistleblower?
Like a narc?
No, I just mean do other wheelchair players have this move in their repertoire? Like I'm sure they do, but I couldn't find any other examples of being like that sick of a move. It was awesome, but it's legal, so I'm sure other guys are definitely going to try to work on that.
Number four.
Yeah, it's funny on the show, whether you like the stories or not, a lot of times just stories come together at the same time. We've got another spinning story.
We do.
How is this possible? We had a wheelchair spin move. Guy spins into destruction, the defender. Now we've got, I had no idea what this was. All I saw last night was a helicopter, and it appears to be carrying a dead body on a rope, and the dead body is just spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning, like going faster. And then when I found out what it was, what?
Yeah, not dead.
Someone's alive!
She's alive.
It was a she.
She. 74 years old. She was hiking in outside Phoenix. So she was rescued. They couldn't really figure out how to get her out safely.
Okay.
So they decided, the wheelchair pilots, to strap her in. And she's kind of dangling from the helicopter. They're trying to pull her up. But as they do, the rotors kind of caused the wind stream. I saw a lot of people saying they actually tied the string to the rotors and they screwed up. That's not what happened. The rotors created a wind stream that the stretcher hanging from the bottom just couldn't get out of, and it just started spinning. And as they're pulling her up, it's spinning more, and it gets to a point where she starts to get close to the helicopter that she is just spinning out of control. And she's going so fast. And I will say, last night I left here and I went to dinner for a little bit, and I must have watched this 50 times. And I could not stop laughing. And as much as I was horrified...
Why are you laughing?
I was horrified by it. I was like, this poor lady. Like, I feel so bad for her. I want to go visit her and make sure she's okay. This sounds awful. But I still couldn't stop laughing. I admit that. I'm awful. I freely admit that. But I think this is objectively funny. Like, as long as she's okay... It's objectively funny, and I don't think you could argue with
it. Do we have any follow-up on how she was? Like, did she just vomit in the bag, like, all over herself repeatedly?
That's my assumption. I mean, she was spinning at a rate that it would be almost impossible not to.
What can you do to defend it? Like, what's the worst ride you've been on? Like, the teacups, you just close your eyes?
No, the spaceship where the gravity sucks you up against the wall.
Yeah, against the wall.
Do you close your eyes to try to protect yourself, or do you get sick?
Nope.
You try to hold your breath, Chrissy. Almost?
I am tough.
Hold your breath.
I think you're like, look, you just don't want to.
You just try to keep your eyes fixated on something that is stationary.
But it's almost impossible if you're inside like a cocoon like that. Like that she's in.
Plus, you don't know when it's going to end, so you're scared. I mean, at some point, you just figure you're going to spin into a tree or a mountain.
Or into the rotor.
There's a lot more things to be afraid of at the state fair in North Carolina than, whether or not I'm going to get sick on a ride. It's whether or not somebody else is going to get sick on a ride or,
Chrissy,
they're going to run out of a fried Snickers before I get there.
Chrissy sounds like she's kidding, but those fairs can be not as scary as spinning. Because this went on for how long?
This is fantastic.
How long? 5 minutes? 6 minutes?
The video is like three.
Okay.
But I don't know. It cuts off and she's still going. I think at some point they just decide to fly and just have her... fly underneath, spinning
She's
around.
Dangling. This is boss.
This is so bad. On the subject of the fairs and how scary they are, I think the only concussion I've ever suffered in my life was actually on a fair ride.
Which one?
Man, I can't remember, but...
Zipper?
It was a zipper, yep.
Was it a zipper?
Yeah.
How did I know that?
Something happened, I got rattled in the cage, yeah. And my head slammed against the back, and I got off, and I was like, whoa.
What's
like, not dizzy.
What's a zipper?
Can't even describe the zipper.
It's essentially it's almost like it's you're caged in, and then I'll send you like a video. I'll send one out.
I think that's the best way to go on this.
But
sometimes questions
it can be very rough. Very rough.
It can be aggressive. And, man, I slammed my head.
Well, also, I will say that those things are very well put together by people that very much care about their jobs.
It's well, that was the thing. It was, you could tell it was an absolute piece of junk. And the person there, I mean, if I had come out and just fallen over, I'm guessing I would have just been swept underneath the ride.
This just looks so dangerous.
It was very rickety. I got on, because I like rides like that. I got on, and as soon as I got on, I'm like, man, this was a mistake. And then just, boom, just rammed the head against the back.
That's a five ticketer. That's one of the higher, that's like a high-end
ride. Look what I got for my five tickets.
Yeah.
This was great. Yeah. All right, top three stories.
Number three.
UNLV. Non-con schedule is out. We're talking Running Rebel basketball. Just released today, the Rebs non-con. 13 games. Did you look at it?
I did.
They open at home against Indiana, Purdue, Fort Wayne. Then Kansas State comes into town. At Cal, at UCLA. Well, that's an interesting four-game start to the season. Yeah. What do you expect there?
I would say 2-2.
Really?
Yeah.
Who are they going to beat?
Fort Wayne.
Okay.
And Cal.
So they lose at home and they lose at UCLA?
I think so.
Okay.
And then I think one of the more intriguing games of the non-conference schedule comes next.
Abilene Christian, Texas State, SMU, Jackson State. Which one?
I don't know if anybody has any idea how good Abilene Christian is.
Wait a second. What?
You want to guess how many games they won last year? Because I know off the top of my head, it's 27. That is a legit team. That's a very good team.
Really?
Yeah.
Because most people will look at that game on the schedule and go, what is this crap? And if they lose the game, there's going to be hell to pay. So laying down the gauntlet right now. Adam Hill is telling you, if this team loses to Abilene Christian, do not be shocked and don't be that outraged.
Well, I don't know everything that back. I haven't looked at Abilene Christian's returning roster, and I don't know what they did as far as transfers and everything like that. I just know last year that was a really good team, and that was a team. Last year's teams, if they came in here, that would be a very competitive game. So we'll see what kind of changes come in the offseason for Abilene, but that's one that I looked at immediately, and I said people are going to laugh that this is a difficult game, but that's not an easy game.
Next two games are road spots. They should have been double evil, but Mick Cronin moved on from Cincy. They play at Cincinnati, and then there is no debate, into the belly of evil in Salt Lake at BYU.
Well, BYU neutral.
At BYU. It's a it's a road game. I get it. It's not in Provo, but it's in Salt Lake.
Yeah. I mean, that's another game that I'm sure people will be fired up for, and that's a game that, you know, at least especially being on a neutral floor, you don't want to be at least competitive, and yeah, I'm sure UNLV's going to want to win that game.
UNLV's non-con Pacific, Robert Morris, Eastern Michigan to close out the year. 13 games, the record.
In 13 games, 8-5.
Mark it down, Chrissy. Adam Hill guaranteeing 8-5.
Guaranteeing.
Locking it right now and saying that UNLV at home, Abilene Christian, what, 2.5?
Pick them.
To pick them?
No, it's not.
You're not going to go out on that limb?
No.
But it's not an easy game.
It's not an easy
game. It's a good program. All right, there it is. So we'll see what sort of interest this generates for ticket sales. It's interesting the way they put the schedule together with these home and homes. Like, clearly, TJ Altenberger is, and you have pointed out, some of the schedule is put in place already by the Benji's crew. But clearly a lot of this is aimed towards 2 years from now, not this year. So just warning everyone now, folks. Adam just said that schedule could result in 8-5 non-con. So if you're expecting top four finish in the Mountain West Conference with the roster as it sits right now, and we're going to get to some things that could happen to the roster in about 15 minutes. But as it sits right now, Adam is saying 8-5 in the non-con. As the non-conference schedule is out, and you can grab your tickets for good games at home like Kansas State and SMU.
Number two.
Let's follow up on this discussion of the downtown soccer stadium plan. So, if you didn't see this morning, the city council, without any hitches, no one pushed back on this, agreed to go into an exclusive agreement with a company to work on a plan for a 25,000 seat indoor, how about this, retractable roof stadium. Look out. What's the cost on this going to be?
You can start driving it up there.
And the opportunity to redevelop the area around Cashman. It's the city of Las Vegas. Mayor Goodman is behind it. Then last night, we start to hear, and this has been discussed, Foley has mentioned it, Vegas Golden Knights owner Bill Foley, you guys get the info at the paper that he is interested in MLS. He would like to make a bid for a team, and the tentative plan there would be Raider Stadium could be the site, but I guess he's also open to building a stadium.
Yeah, and you know, depending on what MLS thinks or what their feedback is, yeah, he would want to bring up to Raider Stadium, but he'd be willing to build a stadium somewhere else, a soccer-only stadium. I think certainly soccer-only is the way to go. I think that's the preferred way to go about doing it. When I first heard it, I thought, wow, I'm sure the MLS wants to be in business with Bill Foley and the Knights and the Raiders and everything else, and I'm sure that'll be the plan. Now, again, as I said earlier, talking to some other people, they kind of said it straight and said, no, it's really not how they prefer to do things. They haven't done in other markets. I still think there's going to be something about working with that group that would be very fascinating for a team trying to come into the market. Like, you certainly don't want to have them working against you. Like, you don't want to say, we're not going to go with you. We're going to go with this other downtown project and have, you know, Bill Foley say, all right, fine, we're putting all of our promotional might behind making sure you don't make it. Like, that certainly wouldn't be good. Raiders, too. It'd be very helpful to have those entities supporting you and promoting you and marketing you as a league and as a team here. So I think that'll be very powerful. But as I said, other people have told me it's more likely that they go the other way and that they favor that sort of a proposal. So maybe the downtown bid would have a better edge in that regard.
For sure, Mark Davis would like the team to play at Raider Stadium. He said, sure. We have 365 days a year to fill in that stadium. We will hopefully be using it for the 8 regular season dates plus all our playoff games. Okay, so that leaves around 353. And then he remembered, oh, and then there's UNLV. So, needless to say, he said it. There are lots of dates open at the stadium, and MLS would fill a bunch of them. So he'd like to see another tenant. I'm sure, yeah, the Raiders folks would like to get as many events in there as possible, and a couple of sturdy tenants beyond themselves and the Raiders would be great.
Yeah. Now, I'll say there's almost nothing I like better in terms of sports venues around the country than soccer-only stadiums. They are unbelievable. And if you haven't been to one and you don't really understand, like, what does that even mean? Go to one and you'll see. Like, just the way that it's constructed, the way that the sight lines are.
Where have you seen
it? Intimacy. I've been to several. I was at the one in New Jersey. Red Bull Stadium.
And Harrison.
Certainly in Carson, which I still think is phenomenal. Even for football, it's kind of cool. But for soccer, it's just an unbelievable venue.
It's a cool soccer stadium. Yeah. I didn't like it for football.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a really cool venue for soccer. Soccer-only stadiums are very, very cool, and I enjoy them.
You know what I thought was silly in terms of location? San Jose?
Right over by the airport?
Yeah, why is it, like, way the hell out?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's such a good downtown.
But I kind of like that venue, too.
So the venue is cool.
Yeah. I haven't been... I'm trying to think of other ones that I've been to. I've been to, like, 6 or 7. I haven't been to one that I didn't enjoy immensely.
Yeah, someone tweeted at us earlier, hey, it seems to be working in Atlanta in the football stadium. You're right. They're the highest drawing team in the MLS, but I'm with Adam on a couple of fronts. I think it should be soccer specific, and for this area, Cashman is the spot.
Well, it's
or Henderson could be a spot, but I don't think we need to be using a 65,000 seat football stadium. Or if you want to go, you know, for soccer, or if you want to go and throw, I don't know how many tens of millions of dollars into Sam Boyd, then that would work as well.
No, I don't want it.
I would do Henderson and Cashman and Sam Boyd before I would think about putting a soccer team in a stadium that big.
Yeah, but and the other thing is that there's not that much hope for us, and especially those who love downtown as I do, and I know you enjoy it. Like, there's not that much hope to get that whole thing developed beyond, like, this is the best plan for it. I'm sure at some point there's going to be other plans, other development ideas they can have. But it's been a long time that they have. I mean, Cashman's been there for baseball, and then there's just kind of been a lot of nothing around it. Like, this is the best plan to get a bunch of stuff down there, commercial and, you know, residential and everything else, to revitalize that whole area. As we heard, Brett talking about earlier, it's from Stewart all the way down to Washington along Las Vegas Boulevard, where like the Neon Museum is, and then there's a lot of different other random properties back there. As I've mentioned, the scariest 7-Eleven of all time is back there. There's a lot of interesting things back there, but to revitalize that area, this is the best bet. So we would not only get soccer, but also a huge area of land redeveloped and, you know, working for us in the city and revitalizing a whole area. So that's all a huge benefit of this that you might not get in another area, and certainly wouldn't get it with the Raiders stadium because that's already going in.
Top story.
Number one.
All right, Adam. Aside from the injuries, because I think your answer could be, on how do the Raptors win? Well, if most of the Warriors are out, that's how. So assuming the Warriors will have an 8-man rotation, right now it looks like no Kamon Looney, no Kevin Durant, Iguodala, and Klay Thompson. Questionable, but
banged up.
They'll be there. So what are the keys for the Raptors to win this time around?
I actually think it's mostly on the defensive end of the floor for them, because, they do what they do offensively. They played much differently in the first game and the second, and a lot of that, if you look at their shooting percentage, the decline that they had from game one to game two, a lot of that was one guy in Pascal Siakam, who made every single shot in game one and couldn't hit anything in game two. So that was a big change. But I think offensively they'll find an equal ground. They'll find enough to compete offensively. It's the defensive end of the floor where they're going to have to do work. And there was a couple of different things from last game. First, their pick-and-roll defense took a huge step back, especially in the second half. The Warriors figured out how to better run their pick-and-roll and how to make it effective. And mostly that involved going to the other side of the floor of Gasol. And the Raptors helped them out tremendously by the guy had, the guy that was playing off the screen was so far back that it wasn't really causing any difficulty in getting around the screen and making a decision. You have to get the defender out closer to the point of where the pick is set. And they really weren't doing that in the second half, and it was destroying them. So that's one big thing. The other thing, and we'll see what the adjustments are, but after Klay Thompson went out down the stretch, I've seen a lot made of this, but the Raptors went to a box and one on Curry and basically displayed his own, except for manning up on Curry and not letting him do anything. Curry's numbers in the fourth quarter? Nothing. And I don't mean no points, no rebounds, no assists. Didn't even really get shots up, so that was effective. That's what they want to do, and if Thompson's not on the floor, I am positive they're going to be playing that again.
A box and one in the NBA.
6 possessions, 0 for 4, 2 turnovers.
I prefer the diamond in 2.
Well, they could do that too.
But I guess it would be a triangle.
Would they stop?
Yeah.
Stop, yeah.
I'm joking. It would be a diamond in 1. But the box in 1, huh?
Yeah, and it worked.
So Klay Thompson has to be out there and be, 75-80%. Yeah, otherwise, defending the Warriors becomes that much easier.
Yeah, and we'll see if it works. I mean, listen, I'm sure with 9 days between games, the Warriors and Steve Kerr watched film and tried to figure out how to stop or how to attack the box in 1. So they've had plenty of time, but it was effective. So I'm sure the Raptors are going to try to at least find spots to put it on if Thompson's not out there.
More on game 3 coming up. And, earlier in the week we talked about that underbelly of college basketball. And looky here, there's a big player for all these transfers. We called it.
It's the Big 5 at 4. Brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers. 570-9000. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Rolling towards game 3 in the pregame. Chrissy's very, she's like very panicked today.
Let's go!
You okay? You're very concerned about the clock? Something on your mind?
Just trying to be responsible.
You are helping. We were having a conversation. If you've noticed, we've been doing a little bit of video up on social media. And it's weird. We can have, fingers crossed, we're going to try to stream down the road. But the board ops, for some reason, Adam, and Christy's more than a board op. She's our producer, our executive producer. She does everything. But the people behind the board are, like, freaked out. What do you guys say during the breaks that you're so afraid of?
I think it's a perfectly legitimate concern for them to have.
I don't say anything that I would be worried about. I learned this because I've seen people do really dumb stuff and say dumb things.
I'm actually going to disagree and say you do say things that you should be concerned about, as everyone does.
I've toned it down.
You learned your lesson in the past?
But it was not. It was something that somebody did through no fault of their. It should not have happened. It just. The machine wanted to disobey the human, and it did.
And the mic turned on?
Yes.
Well, that's.
That happens.
But that's why we have the rule, and people, you know, we were kind of having fun with it. You know, no cursing in the studio during breaks, and, you know, McKinnell would scream about it every day. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you that sometimes mics just pop open. So now the cool thing is maybe we'll have streaming video during the breaks, and we can't control any of it. So,
doesn't he still have dinner, by the way?
He does. He's weird. He said, he's like, the other day, he's like, I won every bet we made. I'm like, you didn't. We split, and you lost that one.
Yeah. He owes us dinner, and he hasn't gotten it yet.
But he doesn't owe me dinner, because he's purchased me dinner a couple of times. I went downtown to meet him, McKinnell. Ryan McKinnell, 2-3 every day, if he's never told you on 920 the game. But he had a big win with blackjack, and then he treated me, so.
Well, that was nice.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, good for you. We didn't get anything, so we're a little bitter.
Was that supposed to count?
I take it as counting. Do we counter Chrissy with the, we didn't get anything?
We got to avoid going to dinner with Ryan.
Okay.
But the whole glass half full.
But Chrissy, the whole we didn't get anything, how would you get it?
By eating it.
Okay, do you get what I'm moving towards here, Adam?
No.
She won't show up.
I've gone.
You're never around.
I've gone to eat with you guys before. Mm.
I understand it. After working with us, me, for the week, I don't blame you for being like, yeah, I don't want to be around that creep.
I actually think last time I was around her at a place where there was food, she ordered and then left before it got delivered.
You ghosted
table.
Again?
No, only once.
That was the last time, though.
The last time.
You ordered and left?
Yeah, before her food got there. And then everybody was like, wait, what? This is hers, right? So nobody wanted to eat it in case she came back, and then she just never
did. She never came back?
No. So everybody's like, are we allowed to have some? Like, I don't know. I think she might come back.
What was it? Was it yummy?
I don't remember. I think it was pizza, actually.
That's not like me to bail on pizza. Or anything that I, especially when I have cash and I leave it there.
I think the point is, it is like you.
Yeah, it's very much like you.
No,
you need to change
that
so it's not like you.
I would rather just you guys be able to do your thing and not worry about me dragging you down.
This is on
You ordered food.
Don't you hate that when people say that? I knew it would get under both of your skin.
It's not under my skin.
It's totally.
It's a funny line. It's a funny line.
You're welcome.
All right, 20 minutes until pregame for game 3. Some other basketball notes, and we'll get back to the NBA. College basketball. One, Tony Bland, who was at the center of this whole FBI scandal. Bland was at USC. He's a former assistant coach and player at San Diego State. At one time, he got to learn under the best when it comes to this stuff, Jim Boeheim, at Syracuse as a player. He avoided any serious jail time, right? No jail time.
And he had a plea agreement, and it called for a potential of up to a year in jail. And as he heard his sentencing, he dropped his head in relief because the judge did not sentence him to any jail time whatsoever. 2 years probation and some community service for Tony Bland.
Do you believe, because of all of this stuff with the FBI, that this particular recruiting season there was less of the traditional cheating, and what we mean is straight payoffs to players?
No, I think last year.
You think it slowed down last year?
I think last year it
slowed
down.
Even at Duke?
I think a little bit. No, of course not. Duke's never going to slow down. They've been the biggest cheaters from the beginning, allegedly, and probably will continue forever as long as he's there. But yeah, I think last year there was a lot of like trepidation of like, what's going on? Like, are they going to get more of us? And like, are they going to cast a wider net? Should we be careful?
Right.
Whoever I'm talking to, are they bugging this? Are they listening in? And Will Wade maybe should have taken that lesson a little stronger.
I'm also thinking, if you weren't in the crosshairs, that left the door open for you to operate on that level of cheating. And I'm not saying North Carolina did anything, but North Carolina seemed to go balls out. Memphis was awesome in recruiting. But I'll give you the other dirty thing that's been happening, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago. The transfer portal has now become the new area to get players. And last week, out of nowhere, there were two players who decided to transfer, go into the portal. I mean, in freaking late May? And there were two guys who were dudes who weathered massive storms at their schools. They were coming back. In the case of Anthony Mathis at New Mexico, granted another year of eligibility. I mean, now you can really win something here at New Mexico. He's got a loaded squad, some good recruits, Paul Weir does. In the case of the other guy, was at my school, Rutgers, and they haven't won forever, but you know they have a chance to finally get over the hump, and I'm over the hump for that school is, you know, maybe get to 17, 18 wins, maybe go 500 in the Big Ten. A kid named Eugene Omoruyi. Out of nowhere at the end of the week last week, they both go to the transfer portal, and both fan bases were like, what? And I immediately said to you, and I started dropping hints on social media, I'm like, Oregon. I don't know where they're going, but this reeks of some schools are recruiting players off of other rosters. And we know it's happened in the past, but this late in the game, I do believe schools are reaching out to players and they're like, let's go.
Yeah, I think
come over here.
I think it's intermediaries for sure.
Talking to people last night who cover the Lobos, they said they're pretty confident. Mathis, even though he's got a big list that includes your school, Michigan, that it seems like it's just about a done deal to go to Oregon. Ding, ding. And this kid, Omoruyi, now keep in mind, he's a power forward. Shakur Houston, UNLV Shakur Houston, right, is a power forward. Houston is deciding soon. Houston is Oregon, Seton Hall, Grand Canyon. And I said, as soon as I saw this dude from Rutgers, a Canadian, go to the transfer portal. If they don't get Houston, watch what happens. And that kid is visiting Texas A&M. Next up, Oregon.
Good for them.
I mean, folks, I can't. That's not a random guess. There's, I'm not going to say hundreds of places these kids could go. Obviously, they're going to make a step up wherever they go. So, 100 places. Both could land at Oregon.
You just have to.
That's hilarious.
Tip your cap at their solid recruiting abilities, especially late in the game.
Well, I assume the rest of college basketball is like, what do we do to safeguard against this? Just schools calling up or intermediaries?
Well, I don't.
Recruiting from your roster.
I don't think
in May.
I don't think it's any surprise that it's a school with such a deep tie to a shoe company. In that, again, as I said the other day, I don't think Oregon coaches are going out and recruiting guys that are already on rosters. But I do think guys still talk to their AAU coaches and people in the basketball world. Mm-hmm. And, hey, they're working out with guys. And they're saying, like, hey, by the way, there's roster openings at Oregon. And I know somebody, and they were interested in you. You might want to, you know, give them a call, go in the portal and see what's going on. I think those things are happening. So it's not really surprising to me that a school that is so deeply tied to shoe companies is getting these kind of players.
Here's a dude who, if it were now, although he's of a different sort of character, and I don't mean low or high, he's just very unique. What sort of battle would Steve Fisher have had on his hands to keep Kawhi Leonard around and not get stolen during the offseason by a big boy?
Which is every single school recruiting him every single summer? I mean, I'm sure it would have happened. It probably did happen.
But I mean, in this era where it's gotten really crazy,
Kawhi's just such a crazy dude, though. Like, I don't know that I don't even know that he has normal conversations. Like, I'm sure somebody would, if they try to go like the subtle route with him, if they're like, by the way, I know some people up at Oregon, he'll be like, oh, good for you, man. That's cool. Look, I don't think he like puts together, not in a dumb way. I think he's just like, he's very aloof into his own world.
What do you think of the story that emerged about his trash talk in college?
I mean, it's pretty hilarious, and it's so typical of him. Like, if you didn't know who was quoted and who was sourced in this story, because they basically talked to every one of his college teammates and people on the coaching staff from when he was in college, if you didn't know that, you'd almost read this and think the story is made up because it's just so prototypical Kawhi. You're like, yeah, you're just writing that because you know that's how he is. But it turns out that's just what it is. They talked to guys, and they talked about how much of a trash talker he is, especially on the floor. But, like, not creative or over the top or like particularly mean trash talk. He's like the kind of guy
stating the obvious.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy that will just score and be like, bucket.
That was it?
That's it. Bucket. And then when he'd get rebounds, he would call himself the board man. And Justin Hudson, who's was on the staff at UNLV, who's also on the staff at San Diego State, he's the head coach of Fresno State now. He goes, if I heard it once, I heard it 50 times. Board man, I'm a board man. That's what he said. I'm a board man. Yeah, that's it. Board man gets paid. He spoke in phrases like that. What? It's just very bizarre.
He's one of the weirdest guys to ever play in the NBA, which is saying a lot. Especially at this level, like as good as he is.
You want to guess what he would say defensively when he would like shut people down?
Nah, he'd probably just rain trash talk fire all over the opposition.
According to DJ Gay, who was a point guard, a lot of people remember him from his battles with UNLV, he said, you just couldn't score on him, even at practice. And then he would just say, nope. Okay. Nope. Nope. Nope.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
Are you now officially distracted?
Oh, it's over. It's over for me.
Why?
We had a very interesting conversation during the break about a particular fast food restaurant, Long John Silver's, and there's not a whole lot of locations around town, and you were lamenting that, the fact that they went out of business and just down the road in Barstow, and Chrissy pointed out that Long John Silver's official account retweeted you the other day, so now I'm all about that. Very distracting.
It's a very scintillating conversation. We'll have to continue it tomorrow when we have the royalty hour. JVT is in. Says, the other day, JVT sent out a tweet and said, no one ever wakes up and says, hey, I want some LJS. And I haven't had a desire for it in a while, but we do have one pretty close to the station. And I was like, I will counter that with, if I want chicken planks, that's where I'm going. And I love hush puppies.
God, I'm really hating this right now.
So I went over today and I tagged JBT and LJS, and I was like, yeah, let's do it. Chicken planks, and it just happened to be, came up with a zinger! Hump Day Hush Puppies!
Hashtag Hump Day Hush Puppies, and then they retweeted it and used the hashtag again.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to get other people to tweet.
I'm
going
to say
thing.
To LJS, throw some more Hush Puppies in the combo meal. I don't know, I grew up on Red Lobster, and it was just like a bucket full of Hush Puppies. Gotta give me more.
Well, it's unfortunate.
Are we trying to be healthy now?
I'm sure it's probably more about frugality than health.
Two hush puppies?
Yeah. What do you want? Give you 20 and then go out of business?
That little piece of it's breaded bread.
God, I'm very
deep fried breaded bread.
I'm very disappointed that Long John Silver's retweet of your tweet only got 5 likes.
Well, they don't have a lot of followers, right?
Only 30,000 followers.
They got to pick that up. I got to pick that up. All right, pick for the game tonight. Everyone, well, not everyone. The game's been bet down on the Raptors side now, so it's 4. I'm laying the points. I'm taking Golden State.
I would lean in that direction, too. I will say I'll probably lean under because I know that 82% of the tickets were on the over last I checked, so I don't really have a take, but I'll go under.